Welcome to Season 2 of EdTech Insiders, where we talk to the most interesting thought leaders, founders, entrepreneurs, educators, and investors driving the future of education technology. I'm your host, Alex Sarlin, an EdTech veteran with over 10 years of experience at top EdTech companies. Aki Kamdar is the CEO of Magic EdTech and Magic FinServe. He's a technology entrepreneur and an investor in the fields of digital technologies, blockchain, machine learning, AI, and natural language processing. Aki has over 25 years of experience in process management, technology solutions, and outsourcing services at companies like Genpact, Headstrong, Compaq, and the HCL Group. Currently, he also serves as general partner at Solmark, a New York-based entrepreneurs equity fund. Aki Kamdar, welcome to EdTech Insiders.
Thank you very much for having me here, Alex. I've heard all your podcasts and, you know, I'm excited to be here with you.
I'm excited to have you here. It's great you're calling in from your New York office. So, Aki, your career has always revolved around digital technologies and services, not always in education, but sometimes. Tell us more about your path and how it brought you into the education and EdTech space and how you got to the idea for Magic EdTech.
Yeah, sure. It's been a long journey for me. I started my career in 85. I was in India selling hardware, computers. Moved to US sometime in 1999. My previous venture was in financial services, you know, and we sold that in 2011. And we decided, me and my partners, we decided to set up a small private equity fund. It's called Solmark. It's based here in New York. And our idea was to invest and grow companies where technology becomes the disruptor and helps the transformation. So I think when we got into Magic Software in 2014, you know, education was obviously booming. You know, the whole conversation around digital education was huge. And we felt that we would be able to, you know, definitely create some value here. I must, you know, share with you a little story of my own personal journey in this. Being in Wall Street, we always thought we are masters of universe. We are the people that make the world go round. So coming into education, within a year's time, I was really humbled to see the impact that we can make using technology in people's lives. And, you know, today, the work that we do at Magic EdTech, I'm really proud of our positioning as digital learning for everyone. I feel that the products that we are building, specifically with the focus on accessibility and DEI, I feel that we are working with, you know, educators to create learning products that are inclusive, that will bring some equity in the learning world. And I think that, you know, now I go back and, you know, talk to my family, I'm very proud that, you know, I'm doing something which is meaningful, impactful. There's a sense of mission here. There was a time in 2008 when I was talking to my children about the financial crisis, because that's when I was running that company. One of my kids actually responded that, "Dad, the technology that you're building for the derivatives firm, it sounds almost like gambling." So from there, coming into education is a big change.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, we talk to entrepreneurs on this show a lot, and that sense of mission of really making a difference and using technology to close equity gaps and make, you know, the best education and best and improving lives for people all over the world is such a exciting reason to go into a field. That's what brought me into education technology as well. But it's quite a turn to go from private equity and Wall Street purely into EdTech. And it's exciting to hear what you've been doing. So, you know, Magic EdTech consults with education technology companies all around the world, but you have offices both in the US and in India, which are two enormous markets for EdTech. I'd like to ask you, you know, having a foot in both markets, where do you see the Indian EdTech landscape going? And what do you see as the major differences between EdTech in the US and EdTech in India?
Thank you for asking that. I must first start with Indian EdTech sector. India's domestic market is booming, as you would see with the growth rates going on over there. Plus, you know, we all know that, like US, India is, you know, the largest democracy in the world. So the idea of education and, you know, creating the sense of citizenship is huge in India. you know, parents are very committed to that concept. And because of the diversity that is there in India, the headroom for growth in terms of edtech is huge. So I think, you know, just the scale is just massive, right? From every perspective, not just the population perspective, but the cultural aspect of this, right? And when you take that, you know, into what could be the potential demand is huge. Because comparing to US, unlike US, US has made a lot of progress in, you know, building the infrastructure for schools, colleges, universities, you know, standards, you know, and those kind of things. Whereas in India, I think a lot of that is being set up, particularly in the digital space. Just to rattle out a few numbers, in India, the K-12 market, 250 million odd students, which is five times the market size of US, right? You know, 1.4 million schools. So just compare that with 14,000 school districts, you know, and multiply that by whatever number of schools. Similarly, 35 million students in higher ed, correct? Besides the fact that it produces the largest number of engineers in the world, there is this last mile, you know, training requirement, which is huge. And you pick up any sector within India, whether it's nursing, whether it is, you know, technology, you pick up any sector, there's a retail, a manufacturing, there's a huge skills gap in India. And today's, you know, leadership in India, which is government, led by the government, actually, they are working very aggressively towards building the network infrastructure for digital learning. They're building standards for all these certifications as well. And I think all of that will go into fueling the growth. So I'm very buoyant on that market. We actually have been working with quite a few folks to begin with, you know, publishers, but now at tech companies as well, to help them power up their learning platforms. Coming back to US versus India, you know, you asked me to compare it with the US market. I think the good old problems of, you know, the last mile, you know, issues with the whole digital learning. Are there enough devices available? Is the network bandwidth enough? And in India, one of the things, especially when you go to the rural market, which is a very big market, is the power supply. And those things still do plague, you know, and therefore it does become a little bit of a frustrating experience when you compare with, you know, US and India and you look at the digital education landscape. But I think, you know, the country has, you know, India, like US, has the willingness to commit to education and power through this.
Yeah. So I'm hearing that the Indian landscape, the Indian sector is so enormous, you know, so many students to access that, and they're building the core infrastructure from both K-12 and higher ed. They're building the digital infrastructure to really be able to actually deliver education to that many students. But so far, there's still some constraints, some the power constraints, bandwidth constraints, just delivery constraints. The last mile training is really important because some of the colleges are relatively new. I don't think you said this part, but I know that, you know, we hear a lot about the Indian market. There are many, many institutions of higher education, but they don't necessarily actually get their graduates to the jobs they want. So, you know, the skills gap that you mentioned. But, you know, we talk on the podcast about the Baijus and the UpGrads and some of these massive, massive Indian ed tech companies a lot. And it's pretty astounding what they're accomplishing.
Yes. I've been, you know, we've invested in a few companies and we see that after we hire students from, you know, all these programs, we still have to invest between 3 and 6 months minimum to get them up to speed and get them, you know, to be able to contribute into our projects and into our, you know, work. So, yes. And, you know, we tried outsourcing that a few times. You know, that gap is still there in the market.
Yeah. And that's such an amazing opportunity when you have so many people hungry for work, hungry to close that skills gap. And right now, the onus is falling on individual employers, but EdTech could really, really make a big difference. And we've seen some of that with some boot camps. We've seen some of that with online courses, but I think this is still a ways to go. And it's such an enormous market. There's a lot there.
Yes. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about more what Magic EdTech actually does. It's such an interesting model. So it works with education publishers, other EdTech companies, like you've mentioned, and it basically helps companies expand their ability to deliver high quality, accessible, and thoughtfully engineered educational experiences. And, you know, when you dig down on what that actually means, it means a lot of different things. The case studies on Magic EdTech are you know, there's UX support, there's accessibility, there's go-to-market strategies, sales training, you design curriculum for certain clients, you've done engineering work to actually build the infrastructure and the technology. That's a lot of different services. So tell us a little bit about the role that the Magic EdTech plays in supporting EdTech companies and how it delivers this wide range of services.
Yes, Alex, and you know, I have to do a better job of that. When you list out the list of things that we do for our customers, it looks too much and it looks very widespread. But I always say this to my customers as well as to my board members, that there's one hook on which we hang all our coats. And that hook is, if you're building digital learning product, come to Magic, we'll help you. Now, within that digital learning product, what you need us to do is that list of things that you pointed out from our website. So I think, you know, if that helps you understand, so essentially my customers are publishers at tech companies and some of the higher education institutions as well. And these customers are building or designing or building digital learning products. We would be able to help them right from product strategy to program management to execution. So whether it is doing the content work or doing the technology work below that, we would do all of that. Because in the digital learning world, you can't say this is content and this is platform, because the experience to the student matters the most. And if you're thinking holistically a student's experience, then I may have to work on content, I may have to work on the platform, but I have to deliver that experience to the student. Because ultimately my goal is, how do I deliver better learning efficacy for the student? That's my goal. So no matter what I have to do. So if you look at all those case studies on my website, ultimately, it points to one thing. Am I helping this digital learning product to deliver a better learning efficacy for the student? What do I mean by that better learning efficacy? Which means a video is 20 minutes long for a nursing program, right? And can I make that video 15 minutes? Can I make it 8 minutes long? So I've improved the timeline. But also, after the video is done, if I have asked 10 questions, can the learner answer all the 10 questions correctly? Now I've created learner efficacy. So this is what I'm focused on. And I want to give them a better experience in that 8-minute video instead of the 20-minute video, right? Now, I'm not necessarily saying that always a 20-minute has to become 8-minute. A 20-minute can become 30-minute too, but I think I'm really focused on the learning efficacy. Can the student answer all the questions correctly? And most of the time, it is about time also. It's about the fact that how do I make it a little more efficient for them? So I think if you think about my customers, the edtech companies and the publishing houses, when they come to us, they're looking for value in this partnership with Magic, right? One is, hey, help me get this product done quickly, faster. So time to market is very important. And there, the biggest value for them is the revenue impact. If I don't deliver that on time, if I don't meet their back-to-school deadlines, then they're going to lose revenue. They're going to have customer issues at their end. So time to market is the first most important value. The second important thing is, can you do it at a lower price? Correct? So the cost, and this has a margin impact for them, right? The next thing is, help me risk mitigate. Help me comply, right? And this is very big, by the way. In our world, you know, help me build a product which is more secure. You know, student privacy is a big thing. Data security is a big thing. You know, help me meet my accessibility mandates. Help me meet my DEI mandates. You know, and, you know, some of the stuff we need to understand the jurisdiction in which the product is being delivered, right? State of Texas may have different jurisdiction, different mandate. Wyoming might have different. You're going to sell into Europe, it might be different, right? So our ability to understand what is required to be delivered. So the risk mitigation is very important, which is where we play a very important role from the product design itself, not just execution, but the design itself, right? And then all this boils down to essentially help you become more competitive in the market. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. This is what we're trying to do for our customers. And have you seen, you know, how technology evolves, you know, for my customers as they get onto the digital, you know, one of the things for them is to remain competitive, because you can't just stick a product out there and just say, okay, I've released it. You have to continuously maintain it. You have to continuously support it. And most importantly, and we'll come to that a little bit later, is operationally support the teachers and the learners to go through and use that product. Because at the end of the day, you know, if they are not able to use it successfully, then, you know, we can't just be happy to releasing a great product.
You know, it's so interesting. It's striking me as I hear you talk about this that, you know, EdTech is really a complicated field. I think compared to a lot of other types of delivery, you know, EdTech companies and publishers really have a lot on their plate. They do, as you say, have to comply. They have to be accessible. They need to maintain in very high levels of student privacy. They also need high quality curriculum. They also need go-to-market and training for marketing departments and sales departments. They need support and engineering. It is a complicated world. And I think that this sort of one hook, whatever it takes approach, it's like, it feels very relevant to a moment right now in EdTech history where you have more players than ever before. There are more companies starting, there are more startups. There are a lot of publishers that have been around for a long time, a lot of incumbents, but also a lot of new players all starting to move into this space and needing to learn about all of the different aspects that go into an EdTech product. So I'd like to, you know, building on that, I'd like to ask you, what is your dream client for Magic EdTech? Do you like working with big publishers? Do you like working with small startups with three people? Well, or anything in between? Who do you really like to work with?
Yeah, very good question, actually. You know, this is something that we ask ourselves very often. So, you know, I'll just be very practical. You know, for me, anybody who says, I need your help and we can help, then, you know, that's fine. It's a good starting point from an engagement perspective. And then, you know, we, of course, try to play a, you know, true consultative role and try to become a partner to them. For us, a dream client is someone, you know, whose values and missions or sense of mission matches to our values and our sense of mission. You know, needless to say, you know, I started this conversation with you that why do I feel great about being in EdTech? It's because that sense of mission that comes out very clearly when you go and engage. Fortunately, most of the folks that we end up working with on the other side are educators, you know, by their, you know, previous work experience. So if, you know, they're trying to solve the problem, by and large, we are kind of matching one another. The other thing is that, you know, are we able to work with the client on the product holistically? We might be doing one piece within that entire product development or delivery, but are we able to engage with the client holistically on the entire learner's journey on that student, on that platform or on that product? The reason why I'm saying this is because if I don't understand the entire value proposition for the learner, then I'm not able to add value, even if I'm doing a small piece within that development cycle. So I think one of the things we do with our clients when we are working with them is to get to that level of understanding and partnership where the customer is involving us to get the holistic view of that learner's journey. Because remember, I'm measuring my outcome in learner's efficacy. Have I improved that or not? If I can't see that, then it's a little bit frustrating that I'm not, you know. So that dream client question, I hope I've answered that well.
Yeah. And I think your focus on efficacy is really compelling because I think we're at a point in the EdTech evolution of, you know, evolution of the space where people are starting to take efficacy and evidence more seriously than ever before. It's something we talk about on the podcast a lot, that for a long time, big, you know, incumbents would continue to sell the same products to schools year after year. And there just wasn't always that much research behind them. Sometimes, you know, that doesn't mean they didn't work necessarily, but it just wasn't always that much evidence. And I think we're entering a phase of EdTech where evidence and efficacy and really making sure that what we're putting in front of students actually moves the needle is becoming more important than ever. So I think the idea of a dream client being somebody who's equally focused on efficacy, who really can share their entire learner journey and give you the context as a consultancy to really be able to add value and not just sort of plug one thing in about compliance and then sort of walk away. I can imagine that's much more fulfilling. So you do get to work with many different clients. You work with K-12 clients, higher ed, adult professional learning. You mentioned nursing programs before. And much of Magic EdTech's work focuses on business-to-business enterprise learning. So, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, you work with such a variety of different kinds of places. What are some of the trends you've been seeing in the field in terms of what education companies are really thinking about and looking for right now in 2022, especially around B2B?
You know, when it comes to digital learning, you know, we can list many trends, but let me see if I can rattle a few that, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, where do I get called for investments, right? Where do I get called to say, hey, let's be a little proactive in the space? And so, you know, one is certainly, you know, there's an area where almost all of my customers end up talking to me on digital adoptions. And, you know, it's a product strategy discussion where they're saying, how do I improve my adoptions, right? And what can I do to improve my adoptions, right? So I think this is one big point that keeps coming up very often. The second is DEI has become a very big topic. 3-4 years back, it was accessibility. I think we are now talking a lot about DEI, particularly post-pandemic, that's come up. Social-emotional learning is a very big topic again. That's something coming up again and again. We are engaged with quite a few of our clients, helping them build products in that space. Teachers' professional training, big focus. Again, I think, you know, we all know that, you know, in the post-pandemic world, I'm not even talking about teacher shortage. I'm just talking about the current teachers and how do we help them adapt to the new realities post-pandemic. And then integration is something, you know, we've been talking about integration even before, but now it is even more evident that, you know, it is an area of huge investment. And each topic is multidimensional. You can, you know, break it down further and, you know, talk about it for a very long time.
I would actually love to do some of that because I think these are all really interesting and relevant topics to many of our listeners. So let me see. It was adoption of, so that's, you know, people actually using the product, you know, in a consistent basis and actually being engaged with it. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. SEL, they sometimes call it social emotional learning, or sort of focusing on mental well-being, health, whole in K-12, that's whole child. For B2B, that might mean, you know, well-being for employees or trainees. Teacher professional development, including training, you know, tech training, I imagine, and integration, or, you know, maybe we could even say like interoperability, making tools work together so that they don't all stand alone and sort of operate in a silo. Did I get those right?
Yes, you got all of them. Wow.
All right. So let's start with adoption. So, you know, adoption, for especially for B2B products, has been the name of the game for a while. It's become, and this idea of sort of engagement, how do you build an ed tech product that people actually want to do, has become a really sort of a holy grail in digital learning. Get something that people want to do, that they engage with as much as they engage with social media or other properties. And that's become super important during the pandemic because education moved largely online. And I think a lot of people are doing online education for the first time ever. You want to make sure they actually like it, they come back, they're using it. So what does adoption and engagement entail in 2022? How are companies thinking about increasing the adoption of their edtech products?
A big topic, first for a publisher or for an edtech company, you know, product adoptions is directly connected to revenue. Right.
Yeah.
That's the first thing, right? Because that's what gets them subscription or renewals, if you may want to talk about that. But I think, you know, you think about it from the learner's perspective, right? And the way I see it is, you know, it goes back to this thing, what we call it is better engagement. You know, if you get the students to engage well, right, that will deliver better learning efficacy, right? You know, and if I as a learner feel that I'm far more efficient on this platform in terms of learning something, then I'm going to keep coming back to it again. So therefore, better options. So better engagement leads to better learning efficacy. Therefore, that leads into better product adoptions. And for the business person, which is in this case is publisher or ed tech company who has that learning product out in the market, it's better revenue as well, right? So the math is simple, you know. And, you know, I talk about this, you know, I can't remember the name of the novel, but when the first time the Pharaoh in Egypt gets a report that there's an animal that the Palestinian army is coming with, which is, and that person describes that animal, it takes 4 pages to describe that animal. At the end of it, we realize it's a horse because they'd never seen the horse over there, right? And so I always quote this example that, and I read those 4 pages to understand what this person is trying to say. And then I figured it's a horse, right? So my learning efficacy is reading 4 pages, 20 minutes gone, or whatever that pace at which I read. And it took me to understand, you know, that's a horse, right? If I were to show you a picture, it would take a few seconds, right? If I were to show a video, then I get a better efficacy because I fully understand what that animal is all about. It would take maybe 30 seconds to understand that thing. So think about that learner efficacy, right? And then it goes to the other question that we often talk about in our business is what kind of a learner you are. You know, are you a text reader kind of a learner, or are you a video kind of a guy? Are you audio, or are you a practitioner? You want to play with something before you learn something, right? You know, so there are different kind of learners, right? And so then you think about, you know, if you are a video kind of a person, maybe I throw at you, you know, the concept of gravity in a video format and teach you gravity that way. But I'll throw one more wrinkle at this, and this is what the educators are now coming to, is that, you know, there are days when you would prefer to learn that topic reading a text, versus there are days you say, I'm not in the text, but today I'm in a mood to do the video learning. Or rather, I would like to do a conversation with somebody, and I would like to learn that way, right? So it could be also which day I want to use which format, right? Now, again, remember, I'm talking about digital learning. And so what happens is you're trying to get to the learner where the learner is today, right? And I'm going to pause here, right? Your digital learning product has to get to the learner where the learner is today and serve up that learning concept, right? This is where you create better engagement. And of course, the product has to be high quality to deliver, you know, better learning efficacy. You know, the pedagogy concept doesn't go away. I'm not writing that off at all. Better instructional design, yes, absolutely. Better learning architecture around that product, absolutely. You need to do that. But you need to dish up that learning product where the learner is sitting. And this is what we all are working towards to create better engagement.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about it in this way because, you know, the idea of the learning preferences, right? How do you prefer to learn? What modality do you like? Do you prefer text or video? I definitely agree that it's not consistent, right? Just say it may be that you prefer to read when you're on your phone on the bus, but you prefer to watch a video when you're in a different situation, or it just might change given any given day. And I think it's interesting to sort of focus on the different modalities and what learner preferences are. And then what are their, you mentioned sort of meeting them halfway. What are their expressed preferences? Like, we know that there are certain types of interactions that people do on their computers and phones that they do often, they really like doing. So how do we learn from those about how to deliver better learning? That would include things like simulations and games, like video learning you mentioned. It might include text learning, which is starting to, you know, be popular, or learning through social media like sites like TikTok and YouTube. All of these are on the table when it comes to what modality looks like. And then it all drives to what you're saying, the revenue. You know, if people actually do it and they actually find it efficient, then they're going to keep going. And that's better for everybody. The learners learn faster, they get further, and the delivery, the education technology delivery system gets more learners, gets more engagement, and ultimately gets more revenue. That's like the positive flywheel we all want to see when we make engaging learning. And I love hearing you talk about it.
Yep. And I think that's what we're talking about, is how do you bring different formats, different media on the same distribution channel? And again, meet the learner where the learner is sitting. That's the most important thing. You know, there are folks who are working on this. You know, they're saying, let us create a lab where create this whole options available. We actually work for one of our customers to create 500 learning concepts for middle school science program. And we exactly dealt with simple, medium, complex simulations, or as we would call it, is, you know, learning objects, we call it, you know, and then make it available in all different models. So the complex one had seven different types of ways in which the learner would interact with the concept of gravity, versus simple was just two simple types of formats in which they would interact in that learning object, so to say. So I think, you know, we all, and, you know, Alex, one reality for all of us is that it's easy for us to say this, but it's also very costly to put it together.
Right.
Right.
That's the trick.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have to maintain quality, it's, you know, it's very costly. So I have created learning objects which are as low as $400 each learning object. And I've extended that same to a, where the cost has been as high as $15,000 for each object. I also have done learning objects which are as high as $80,000, which is, you know, this is just the cost for building that learning object, you know, which has this all these different options available for a student to switch from one to the other.
It's really, I love that you brought up the cost, because that's absolutely true. I think a lot of us in the edtech world want to make really engaging learning. We want to get it. We want to make meet students where they are, but then the cost becomes prohibitive. And I think we're starting to move to a place where technology is a little less expensive. Video is a little bit more approachable. Even VR, which was, you know, considered wildly costly, is starting to come down in price. And it's opening up all sorts of new channels for how to create engaging media. Let's move to our second trend. So you mentioned that right now, diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is really all over the place in ed tech. And, you know, in theory, we've talked about this a couple of times, digital technology should and could be an amazing tool to make learning more accessible and more equitable. There's no sort of, there shouldn't be any inherent bias in digital technology. That said, there's still lots of work to be done to actually get us there, to ensure that ed tech and that curriculum is fully inclusive and sort of works for everybody. So from your perspective, what does DEI look like right now in ed tech? What are people looking for?
Yeah. So you mentioned accessibility and DEI. You know, that's interesting because I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But just to answer that question first, which is, you know, the very basic thing to me, the way I see it, is the learning product representing the diverse world that we live in. Very simply put, right? Is the product treating different socioeconomic, cultural demographics with fairness and equitably? Simple question, right? If I belong to a minority, can I relate to the learning material that represents, you know, which probably currently only represents the majority group? Can I relate it if I'm a minority? Can I relate to a product which is only talking about something that a majority group can relate to? You know, and the world's going on that way. It's not that, you know, it's just that now people are bringing it forth. They're talking about it. And I think I'm glad that that's happening, right? Because I always have said this to my customers, that actually, without getting into the cultural wars that often the DEI term brings to the table, it also goes down to the same question that we answered earlier, which is that if I can't relate to the product, then my engagement is going to fall. So my learning efficacy is likely to suffer. Therefore, your product adoption will suffer. So if I'm the creator of this product, I'm designing this product, I may as well think DEI first. Why would I not think? Because it does affect the engagement, in my opinion. It does affect the learning efficacy. So get out of the culture war and think engagement, right? And I'm absolutely sure everybody will come to the same side of the table, that if you do want to create this learning product, it better incorporate the DEI concepts, because it is impacting the learning. Nobody's going to argue against that. But we're starting on the wrong end, which is culture wars. And that's where I think a lot of this thing becomes very heavy.
Yeah. I mean, especially as you know, it's so politically charged right now, this idea of critical race theory and, you know, teaching. Yeah. I mean, the 1619 Project, there's been so many incredibly distracting, I would say, you know, culture wars that stem out of some of the ideas behind this DEI world. But I agree with you that at the end of the day, to get an accessible and efficacious, a useful edtech product, you can't bake in biases that will alienate many of the students you're trying to reach. And there's been lots of egregious examples of this in curriculum in the past. I have a kind of a goofy metaphor here. It might be a little bit silly, but it reminds me of how the Marvel superhero movies over the last, you know, 15 years, whatever they've been, you know, it was Iron Man and it was Captain America. And a lot of them for quite a while were all had white male leads. And they started doing, adding a little bit more diversity. And people at the time said, you know, hey, are you, is it a good idea to make a Black Panther movie? It's so different than what some of the other movies. And that broke every box office record. I think it was nominated for an Academy Award. It was great business. It was great business for them to move away from the majority culture. And I think sometimes we forget that we think of it as this sort of a equity, this bleeding heart play, but really in a lot of ways, it's good for everyone to incorporate diverse perspectives, especially the delivery of media and ed tech. Is that metaphor just too ridiculous, Aki?
Or no, I was actually going to give you an example of that. And you talked about, you know, by the way, you know, have you seen the Disney's Miss Marvel?
Not yet.
You should see So, you know, again, you know, they brought in a different minority to become the lead player. And, you know, you should see it. You know, it's first of all, it's very well made, you know, and it's about, you know, Asian, South Asian family, you know, in New Jersey, you know, very inspired by this whole superpower, you know, going and attending these events and, you know, ComCon and all this. And then, you know, she gets the power and she becomes the voice for that minority community, you know. So it's very interesting. So, and, you know, it has great viewership, by the way. So, you know, it's again, you know, it does link back to the commercial success. So that is there. And I think the idea is that, you know, our fabric, the purpose of education is to make our citizens aware, whether it's, you know, young kids or it's adults, aware of the diversity, of the different ways of thinking, different cultural aspects, different social, economic aspects, right? And, you know, be able to relate to that, right? And if we are missing that opportunity by not incorporating that, that's, you know, a very sad situation to be in. And our job is to actually do that. And an educator's job is to actually do that.
Yeah, this is the world we all live in now. I mean, it's a world that is so interconnected where, you know, nobody goes very long without meeting people from all over the world, from different backgrounds, from all sorts of different, you know, with different orientations and races. So it's negligence to teach people to think in a world that is not diverse. It reminds me also of that show, Never Have I Ever, which I think is the number one show on Netflix right now. Also, you know, a sitcom designed by, I think, Mindy Kaling around South Asian, you know, and all sorts of different types of students. And it's the number one show on Netflix. And I think, you know, people just think it's this niche idea and it just isn't. Anyway, we should get back on top of traffic here. So we've talked about adoption. We've talked about a little bit of diversity and equity and inclusion, hopefully in a way that makes sense. It is not. And then, you know, I think the third was about well-being and social emotional learning. So talk to us a little bit about why social emotional learning has become such an enormous issue, especially, you know, in a time of so much anxiety and stress coming out of a pandemic.
I think it is precisely because of the timing of, you know, pandemic and, you know, it caused anxiety and stress and that brought a focus on that. And by the way, the idea of social emotional learning was there before also. It's just that it became a little more mainstream just now. You know, helping students to cope with the stress and anxiety, you know, is something that, you know, and it's not just at the level of, you know, young kids, though we start really at that level. In fact, we are working with some of our customers to build some products for the young learners in the SEL space. And then, you know, obviously address it, you know, to the adult learners as well. I think, you know, we all have realized that just focusing on the adult learners itself, you know, the workplace is changing. Or, you know, work environment changing is becoming hybrid. People are working remotely. You know, the interconnection and social fabric has gone away. And so there's a renewed interest even from the corporates like ours, right? We're trying to get some, you know, a different kind of a social emotional learning into place, right, for our team members as well. I think, you know, it's one is the learners, but the other is also the teachers have to be able to adjust to this program because this is not something that was codified before or was taught before. So it's something very new and it's coming into mainstream. You know, not many, and you know, we'll talk about teachers' professional development as well later, but not many, you know, coaches are available to put this in place, which is where the pressure is coming in from the digital learning side saying, hey, because we have less number of coaches and mentors and teachers in this space, can we put it into a product and can we make it available in a format? And it's a little bit of a challenging thing because, you know, it's a subject which does require some amount of, you know, content that needs to be produced in a very creative manner to engage the learners. But I think there's also some amount of, you know, so-called in-person learning that has to take place in this space. I'm very excited with some new technologies coming in, particularly, you know, the, you know, AR, VR, I would say, you know, could be applied in this space. We experimented the VR, you know, more from teaching students who had certain, you know, needs, you know, so for example, kids who are you know, verbally challenged, kids, they needed help. They couldn't interact in a class, you know, for a certain conversation with teachers or other students. Give them something in the VR space and they would be able to, they would be very comfortable in that environment. They would feel safe in that environment. So, you know, give that safe environment. I was looking for that word in the VR world and, you know, help this learning product, you know, become more effective, so to say. So I'm very excited with what technology can help us do in this space.
I really am too. I think it's such an interesting expansion in some ways of what EdTech takes on in terms of what it can support students and teachers with. And it's not just about academic learning. It's really about how do you, you know, help somebody get over anxiety or depression or stress, or and we're seeing record levels of all of these things in students of all ages. And I think, you know, teachers who've been in the classroom a long time know very well that they have always had to do social emotional learning. It comes with the job. They just haven't had support for it. It usually has to do with a student staying after and asking them for help, or somebody crying, or somebody, you know, or just having students who are so anxious or miserable that you have to, you know, change your strategies. But they've been in it totally alone without any tech, without any monitoring, without it sort of being even talked about. So I'm pretty bullish on the idea that social emotional learning, coaching, mentoring, mental health, just as a topic, is starting to really be front and center. I think hopefully this is one of the silver linings of the pandemic, is that we come out of it saying, hey, we've thought education was just about, you know, information and skills. It's not. It's about, you know, everything that students go through when they are growing up and trying to figure out their place in the world. I wanted to ask you about teacher professional development. You mentioned it in passing there, this idea that teachers, you know, social emotional learning is out of scope for a lot of teachers. They've done it casually, but they have never been trained in it in any particular way. Professional development has been around for generations. My mother-in-law and my mother actually are both teachers for years, and they've done, of course, lots of professional development. What does TPD, what is professional development or PD look like in 2022? What have you seen from all your clients and in the field?
You know, again, I'm going to refer to pandemic as an inflection point, or, you know, and 2 years of, you know, challenges that we all have faced collectively as civilization. Teachers, I think, have faced the maximum burden of that. I think, you know, the role has, you know, has emerged or morphed into not just teaching math or, you know, language in a classroom, but, you know, literally dealing with, you know, the stress and anxiety that the students bring to the classroom. Plus, you know, the whole, you know, administrative burden that has come along post-pandemic for every teacher has actually caused a lot of teacher attrition. And that in turn has created a lot of pressure in, you know, improving the supply of teachers into the school systems, you know, and this again is causing a lot of focus on teacher professional development as well. So I think, you know, there is, if I just were to ignore for a moment the supply side issues that we have developed teachers for the classroom, I think we just look at the current teachers that are there in the system and how we can upgrade their skills to the new, you know, hybrid learning, to the new paradigm of digital learning, then I think, you know, we'll be in a better place to start with, in my opinion. Back then when we were interacting with the school districts, you know, the teacher professional development also had a special investment towards, you know, technology training. But we all know that the digital adoptions by teachers has always been behind. In fact, they lag compared to the students and parents adopting technology. Yeah. And that used to create friction. Fortunately, during the pandemic, many teachers were forced to learn digital and adopt digital at a much faster pace. And I think if we can keep that momentum up, by substantially upgrading them, then that'll be great. I'll leave another important thought here, and that will help us, discuss the next point, which is, you know, in our education environment, the number of tools have multiplied substantially. And the biggest feedback that comes from, you know, the educators, the teachers, is that, you know, dealing with more than 20 to 25 applications in a school environment or products in a school environment is extremely hard for teachers to come up to speed, make the most use of it. And, you know, reporting on to the efficacy of these products is just, you know, difficult for these teachers, right? I know in my environment, if I have to roll out a new product, I take a lot of time before I assume that my team members will be able to use it effectively. But in the schools, you know, asking a teacher to give additional half an hour, even in a week's time, is very difficult, you know, for them to carve that week, because they have already, their schedules are already overpacked, they're overworking, they're taking a lot of work home already, and then asking them to give that additional half an hour, 45 minutes, is very difficult. So I think in case of teachers' professional development, micro-learning is a big step towards that, you know, and being able to provide them the learning material anywhere and everywhere is very important. I also feel that, you know, if you can provide them learning in an FAQ model, right? Frequently asked question model, which is, you know, just in time. You know, hey, I'm stuck with this. What do I do? Rather than wait for a monolithic session to take place, you know, and take them out for 3 days somewhere and do the TPD and bring them back, right? So I think we'll have to think of many different models to make, you know, that whole thing effective.
Yeah, so many good points in there. I think it's really, the asynchronous professional development, the idea that the pandemic has accelerated digital adoption. So we've got to keep that momentum. I totally agree. And teacher overwork is just, you know, an epidemic right now. The shortages are so big. And what that's doing is putting even more burden on the teachers who are staying in the classroom because they have sometimes more students or just, you know, don't have special ed or support. So I definitely agree. It reminds me of something, you know, I spoke recently to Nicole Tucker Smith, who's the CEO of a PD company called LessonCast. And she said something that was so funny. It reminds me of what you're saying here, which is she said that, you know, in some schools, they're saying our teachers are so overworked. It's so hard. They need more professional development. And others are saying our teachers are so overworked. It's so hard. We need to get rid of all the professional development because they don't have time for it. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's such a funny paradox, I think, in schools right now. So it brings us to our fifth and final trend. And you talked about integration. And, you know, we've talked on the podcast a bit. We talked to Aaron Moat from Innovate EDU about interoperability. We talked to Learn Platform about how teachers use 86 different ed tech tools in the U.S. You mentioned more than 25 as a problem. They have 86 in some cases. Tell us about integration and interoperability and how you advise the companies you work with to ensure that, you know, that their products aren't just adding more burden and they actually interoperate with others.
Yeah, it's a big subject. And I'm telling you, if you talk to me after 20 years, I think we'll still talk about that topic, which is interoperability and integration. You know, we'll keep talking about it. You know, my background is in financial markets previously also, and we dealt with this problem of integration and interoperability forever, which is one of the reasons why when I started working here in Magic, I first thing I did is I got Magic to be part of the industry standards body, one EdTech, you know, earlier it used to be called IMS Global. So we are contributing member in that body. So we sit on many different, you know, work groups to understand what's emerging, work towards defining standards. In fact, we talked about DEI, you know, before. And we are on the work group committee for DEI and accessibility defining standards over there as well. Because we think that, you know, we all have to work together, define standards for the industry so that when we build the products, we are building the product, keeping in mind that these products have to interoperate. And at the heart of the, again, I go back to my same, you know, discussion that I had earlier, which is the experience of the learner and the teacher has to be very good on the product. Okay. If the experience is poor, then you will have poor engagement, then you will have poor adoption, and you will have, you know, so I think it's a cycle. And, you know, almost all the trends that we talked about does come back to this. If I have to deal with 25, 30 different products, or as you said, 86 different products, there is no way, you know, these products, you know, I mean, they better be integrated at the back end. Okay. If they're integrated, that's great. But the unfortunate thing is that, you know, many products are designed in a very siloed manner, right? And sometimes, you know, it's intentional because the ad tech company wants to keep the data to themselves and they want to be able to monetize the data versus, you know, letting that data go somewhere else. Whereas some companies are unintentionally ending up designing it that way because that is the fastest way they can deliver the product to the market. So, you know, the whole idea is, okay, let me get the product out of the door first. Then I will work towards, you know, creating the interfaces which can then talk to other systems. And that never happens. You know, by the time you develop enough legacy in the platform, that you, unless you're willing to put a lot more money to change that so that you can now start talking to other systems. So it's a very, you know, and being a technologist at the back, you know, I know, I understand how these decisions then become, you know, big problems for us in the, down the line. And keeping up to standards also is a costly affair. You know, getting certifications is a costly affair. But if you want to be successful, and if you want to create a successful, a good positive experience for your learners, then I think there's no option on this. We haven't touched a topic called personalized learning, the holy grail of our industry. We've been promising that for the last 20 years, haven't delivered. Okay, but I think we're getting there. But I think fundamental thing below that, you know, would be that I should be able to understand my learner's profile and my learner's journey. And I cannot do that if I cannot get to know where my learner has been, right? And therefore, I cannot, as a platform, deliver a personalized learning unless I'm, again, being siloed. And I'll never be able to do that, right? Because my learner goes to different topics, different subjects, different platforms. So how do I figure that out, right? There's no way I can do it. I need to be able to work with other platforms, understand where the learner has been. And then, you know, top it up with all data privacy, data security, and all that stuff that comes in your way. But there's a way to solve all of that.
I agree. I love that positive note to end on. I think, you know, we may still be talking about it in 20 years, but it is solvable. It is. And I think you know, we've gotten a little bit better as an industry in having data be able to go from one platform for another, or to have products that integrate into others. I think it's getting better and people are more aware of it than they have been in the past. There's the education technology writer, Phil Hill, has this hilarious line, which is about, you know, given enough time, every ed tech product will become an LMS.
Good one.
And I think it's exactly what you're saying. You know, people keep siloing and adding more, and then they have to add a grade book, and then they have to add a accessibility. You know, instead of all these ed tech products complementing each other, you end up with a million competing products that all try to be sort of a one-stop shop, but people use them only for one thing. It's been a mess, but I love your positivity and I hope we're moving in the right direction. I think so. And it was great to hear that you're working with, you know, IMS, or what is the new name for
IMS
Global?
It's called One EdTech Group. No.
One EdTech Group, to think about the standards and the future of this, because it is really important. So I have one final question. You know, we've talked about five different trends. They're all quite different: social emotional learning, diversity, equity, and inclusion, teacher professional development. Given these trends and your overall view of the landscape, you know, how would you advise EdTech companies generally? How should they be thinking about this moment to best serve their learners? Should they go all in on one of these things, or how do they put it all together?
I think, you know, I've said this before, the landscape is very big and, you know, you can do many things in this industry to create an impact. And, you know, I can give a very simple answer. Focus on the learner's experience on your product. And the outcome that you want to focus on is learning efficacy, right? If you can measure the outcome from learner's efficacy perspective and focus on learning the experience that the learner has on your platform, I think that's what they should do, no matter which area you're working in, front, back, you know, which subject, which discipline, doesn't matter. I think as long as you are able to focus on these two things and deliver, I struggle with that every day. We challenge ourselves every day that are we doing a little better than what we did before in the experience that we are providing to our learners, and whether the learning efficacy has improved from what we did last time.
Yeah, I think that's a really great advice. You know, keep focused on the learning outcomes, the efficacy, and making sure people really enjoy your product and adopt it. To your point earlier, they engage with it, it really works for them in every way. Then, you know, you can talk about different trends, but if you keep your eye on that prize, you'll know which ones to use that actually drive you in the right direction. So just to take us out, we always ask every guest, what is the most exciting trend you see in the landscape right now? I know we've talked about a lot today, but let's see if there's any more. You know, one trend that you think our listeners should keep an eye on, something that's maybe coming down the pipe.
So I've heard this from someone in the industry, and this is very interesting. So throughout our conversation, we talked about, you know, learning outcomes, right? I think, you know, look at how EdTech can play a role going beyond learning outcome and look at lifetime outcomes, right? Today, you know, we are very sequential in our learning, which is, you know, K-12, higher ed, you know, and then, you know, go and work. But the workplace is changing and it's become very dynamic, right? And that means that I have to keep doing lifelong learning, right? And for that, you know, and given all the pandemic that has happened, you know, we all have learned one thing is that, you know, we're going to make now better choices about our life first and then decide what I want to do from a career perspective. And then say, if I want to have this kind of a lifestyle, then maybe I want to do something completely different. And therefore, maybe I have to reskill myself for that. So how do I help my target market or my learners to make better life choices rather than learning choices? So if you see the mission statement we have at our end, we say we want to help our learners their pursuit of happiness, you know, and that's important because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not learning for the sake of learning. Okay. Does it deliver better happiness for me? Right. I think we have to think like that. It goes beyond learning outcome. So when I look at this whole trend that you talked about at tech, right, I think instead of answering, you know, AI, ML, blockchain, you know, those are tools. AR, VR, metaverse, you know, good jargons to throw at you, right? But let's focus who we want to be as EdTech. Let's focus what we can do for our learners. Can we help them make better life choices? Can we help them in their pursuit of happiness?
I love that. It's such a great framing. It's funny, you know, I think we debate in the EdTech space a lot about, you know, career outcomes versus academic outcomes versus, you know, becoming an enlightened person, you know, the idea of the liberal arts ideal, you know, being a citizen of the world. I love that, you know, when you say life outcomes, happiness, those can be reached through any of those routes, right? You can have a happy life through a career. You can have a happy life through being an enlightened person who loves to read philosophy. You can be a happy person by, you know, meeting your significant other through an educational experience. And I think it's such an interesting way to sort of move beyond that debate and just think about, you know, life outcomes. Very inspiring. I really like it. And then our very final question, what is one resource, can be a book, a blog, a Twitter feed, a newsletter, that you would recommend for anyone who wants to dive deeper into any of the topics we discussed today? And I know we discussed a wide range.
Oh, wow. Don't get me started on the books because I'm a big book guy. So I can take you anywhere. Book. Okay. I must tell you that, you know, I actually have been very impressed with this book written by Tara Westovers. It's called Educated. It doesn't talk about education policy. It doesn't talk about anything that we talked, but it will, if you read that book, it'll still get you to many of those topics, right? In a very commonsensical way, you know. Because at the end of the day, when we are addressing a learner, we're not addressing the learner as a student who walks into the door. We're addressing the learner as a whole. You know, what kind of family that person is living in, or no family, maybe, you know, what kind of society or community that person comes in from, you know, good, bad, ugly challenges that person might be facing. And therefore, you know, when I was reading that book, you know, and I went over that book a few times just because I got so much caught up by what was being, you know, the journey of that person, you know, to go through. So I don't know whether you heard of that book at all or not, but it is.
No, I've read it. It's a great book.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, really. And I think it matches your idea about education as a way to change your life, to get a happier life. She really used it to completely escape her
upbringing. No matter the kind of challenges she had, I mean, you know, the odds were completely against her to get any education of any kind. And she lands up in Harvard. And she probably has now inspired millions of people with that book. I've been thoroughly, you know, impressed with that journey, and I talk about it a lot. I personally become very open-minded about the pathways that a student can take, a learner can take in their lives. I have two children. One is 27 years old. The other one is 22 years. You know, like a typical Indian parent, I would have liked them to become a doctor, engineer, or something like that, or, you know, follow my path of technology, business, or whatever. But, you know, now I'm completely open. I said, you know, you'll find your happiness wherever, you know, however you want to do it. You don't have to follow a certain path, you know. So it's opened me up a lot. I do want to recommend one more thing, which is, you know, I follow a podcast. I'm a big podcast guy as well, by the way. So thank you for all those podcasts, you know. I've heard of them from you also. I enjoy your EdTech Insiders podcast. There's one podcast that, you know, I would recommend. It's called Econ Talk. It's by Russ Roberts. I don't know whether you heard of that or not. But, you know, I would love to get your feedback on that. I've been following Russ Roberts for a very long time. It's called Econ Talk. To me, you know, if you ask me where do I go and do my learning, that's the podcast. You know, he covers topics across the map. You know, he does ed tech sometimes. He does everything else. He brings an economist perspective to many of the topics, but not necessarily so. You know, he kind of, you know, goes all over the map. But he's very good.
Great, great suggestion. Yeah, I'm looking at, yeah, it sounds absolutely fascinating. Well, as always, we will put links to all of the resources. In this case, it's Educated by Tara Westover and the Russ Roberts Econ Talk podcast in the show notes for this episode. You can find links for them there as well as on Google or anywhere else you find your podcasts and books. Aki Kamdar, this has been an amazing conversation. I feel like we've ranged over so many different aspects of EdTech that are so important. And of course, we will have the link to Magic EdTech site as well in our show notes. Thank you so much for being here today on EdTech Insiders.
Alex, thank you so much for the opportunity. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of EdTech Insiders. If you like the podcast, remember to rate it and share it with others in the EdTech community. For those who want even more EdTech Insider, subscribe to the free EdTech Insiders newsletter on Substack.